welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast hosted by Data Protection People. My name is Ollie Rear and I'm joined for the purposes of this intro by my colleague, Mr. David Holmes. Dave, good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well? Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Good.
Yeah, likewise, I am very well. I am particularly chipper because we've just come off our episode with a longtime friend of the podcast and collaborator, Barry Malt, who is just a fab guest, isn't he, Barry?
He was brilliant. I actually missed the last session with Barry. So I think I was spending on leave, so I caught it back on the podcast series. It's great to listen back to and to pick up on some of the key points, because he's always got some little golden nuggets of advice when he talks to you, and as he did today. And I think there's a lot of sound advice and some great tips.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason we had Barry down to speak to us today is because we were talking about the DSPT, so that's Data Security and Protection Toolkit. Now, those of you in healthcare or healthcare adjacent, social care adjacent, will obviously know what the DSPT is. It's the requirement to complete for anyone handling patient data for the NHS. And it can be, you know, not necessarily the most straightforward task. There's a lot involved in that. It's effectively a self-assessment style standard, isn't it, Dave? I think that's probably the way that we would refer to it. We spoke about it as an assurance tool as well in the main. And part of the reason we brought it up is because it's changing. And this year, some new changes have been introduced. Those changes aren't massively substantial, but we thought it was an opportunity to bring it up and talk about it because it's an interesting topic. And it affects a number of our customers, but also more broadly, because even those who aren't in social or healthcare necessarily may have interesting, you know, sound bites to take away in terms of information governance more generally, right, Dave, in data protection?
For sure. And we certainly looked to some of the analogies where we could draw them between the experiences around the toolkit and experiences generally within trying to implement the GDPR framework instead of the DPST framework and maintaining it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we spoke to Barry about that. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I ended up effectively handing over the reins to you, Dave, on this one. I had a couple of IT problems, but you did a sterling job, I thought. And it was nice for once to be able to actually just sit back and listen in and, you know, absorb all that knowledge from the two of you. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. We did do a little bit of news as well, but we save most of that for next week because we'll be back with GDPR radio. So same time, same place. Come and join us live. It really does make the difference. It's particularly enjoyable to be, you know, part of the community, be in the forum and be able to chat to people live on the session. Is really great. But yeah, if there's anything that you want us to raise on that session, then come along or get in touch with us and we will talk about it next week. If you want to get in touch with Barry, we will leave links to all this stuff in the description of this podcast. We'll also put it out on all of our socials, or just get in touch with us. We can put you in touch with him. It's no problem at all, really. The final thing that I'd like to flag before we let you get stuck into this episode, I'm putting this out there now. We're looking at running a bonus content mini-series on the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. We're verging on a century of episodes, so we thought, you know what, we'll do something to celebrate that a little bit. And we're going to be running a series of shorter episodes where I will be talking to not just Dave for once, but some of our other key stakeholders across DPP, the business, talk to them about their background, but both personal and professional, how they got into data protection, and basically give you, the listener, an opportunity to really get to know us and get to know some of our leaders, effectively, some of our brightest sparks, some of our key stakeholders, Dave being one of them. Obviously, you all know Dave quite well at this point, but we'll also be speaking to some people you may not have heard from before. So we think that'll be really, really interesting and hopefully something you enjoy. Look out for those. They'll be coming over the next couple of weeks. We won't be doing those live. We'll do them pre-recorded and put them out as bonus episodes in the podcast feeds that you're normally subscribed to if you're subscribed. And if not, why aren't you? Subscribe. I think that's everything from us, Dave.
Yes, I think so. I think it's more or less covered everything. And like I say, if you're not subscribed, please do. If you're not, you could well be missing out on some great content like today's session.
Absolutely. So without further ado, we will let you get stuck into this latest episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Before we talk all things DSPT, we tend to just flag a couple of news items. We'll do that very, very quickly. Dave, anything from you to report this week? There are a couple bits which are very interesting. We'll probably come back to them on our next GDPR radio episode, but anything you wanted to flag?
Just very quickly, having a scoot around, I don't know if you've seen it recently. It was on the BBC 2 days ago that there was a court win for a man fined for not keeping his webcam on with work. It was a Dutch case with an employee of a US-based IT company who was awarded approximately €75,000 as a consequence of that. And it was just interesting, isn't it? Because it's when you're looking at these things, it kind of relates to monitoring in the workplace. And there's been an increase in that because of COVID and people now working from home and companies trying to make sure that we're all still diligently working and making sure that we're not skiving off a little bit too long when we go to put the kettle on and so on and so forth. So it's just interesting to see that come up. Did you come across that, Oliver or Barry? Have you seen that in the news recently?
No, I haven't seen it in the news, but it's very interesting because I do a lot of online training and, I'm not sure whether sometimes people are really there, but they get their certificate at the end of it. But I think that's rather interesting. I like that.
For sure. It's a really interesting point because when you look at meetings, I've certainly been to some meetings with some clients and they insist that everybody's got their cameras on, possibly for the purpose of making sure that they're not playing Candy Crush or posting something inappropriate on Instagram or whatever they are and they're actually engaging with the meeting. But conversely, sometimes I find it a bit distracting when you're trying to talk on a steering group meeting and you're trying to provide some information about a particular thing to do with privacy or that kind of thing. Let's say we're just highlighting bits around a DPIA and somebody gets up and walks off or a cat walks across the screen or somebody comes back with a cup of tea and a bit of cake. And sometimes I find the camera on is being a little bit off-putting, but on the same score, it is nice to know that the audience is there with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, agreed. I did see that. Interesting news story. Do you have anything else bring us? I've got a couple bits, but
I've just put that in the link to that in the chat if anybody's interested. The other thing that I've been quite interested in, I've just seen again, it's come out recently, is the ICO's employment practices guidance on monitoring the workplace, which ties in nicely to the previous article that I've come up with to highlight about that. It's now out for public consultation, so if anybody wants to read it and have comments on that, it's up until the 11th of January 2023. So again, a useful read, and if there's anything in there that you wish to raise, then please do partake in the consultation process.
Yeah, absolutely, lovely stuff. The only bits from me, and we'll talk about them more next week on our GDPR radio episode. Obviously, it's worth flagging this cyber attack on US airports. I think that's interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week. About a dozen US airports taken offline temporarily. Or at least their website's taken offline temporarily by potentially Russian hackers, or at least Russians have taken credit for it. And also this story about Joe Biden signing his EU-US executive order, which is potentially a big deal. I think if you're being cynical, Dave, I'm looking at you. you'd probably see it just as political posturing. I know what you like. But it's worth raising, and we'll probably talk about it more next week. But I don't know if either of you got any thoughts on either of those, or if not, we can get straight into our main topic of discussion for today.
I just think it's one of those things that we'll have to wait and see. There's so many things in the pipeline to wait and see, whether it's the new data protection bill or what you want to call it, the scrapping of GDPR by Michelle Donnellan, and this is just something else. It's just something in the pipeline, and whether it'll happen in the next 12 months or not, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, for sure, and I do like a little bit of political bashing, but I suppose I ought to refrain from trying to talk about government U-turns again, that kind of thing. topical. But in relation to the executive order, I fully agree with Barry on that one. I think there's going to be, we'll have to see what comes out. I know I've certainly seen some conversations that if it goes through and it's approved, that the UK may try to grab hold of the details on that one and try and have something similar between the UK and the US in that sense. Personally, for me, I'd like to understand whether there's a book out on how long it'll take Max Schrems to get his teeth into it, to see whether it's worth a little punt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very topical, because as Dave Hendry points out, the Chancellor has just been sacked, literally, as we're recording this. Yes, Kwasi Kwarteng is gone, I'm afraid. Which,
it's unfortunate, because on the evening news last night about 6 o'clock, he said he wasn't going anywhere.
Well, quite. But obviously, what, you know, part of what that highlights is when we talk about some of these reforms, and as Barry says, the DCMS leading potentially reforms of our statutory framework. Obviously, a lot of this is contingent on who is in post at any one point in time, because you know, we've had a number of people come and go in that respect. I probably don't need to say any more about that, but yeah, we'll have to see how that progresses. I suggest we get into our main topic for today, because I suspect that that's why most people have joined us, to talk all things DSPT. Before we do, Barry, I wonder if, I mean, most of you here live with us will know Barry, but I thought maybe if you could just introduce yourself a little bit, tell us about who you are, your background, what you do, and why you've got such a wealth of knowledge on this topic specifically.
Okay, so yeah, so thank you. So my background is, I'm not sure everybody knows me, but I'll take the compliment, Ollie. So, but yeah, so I trained as a nurse back in the 1970s, and I actually met an REF medical person yesterday at the care show, and he was trying to get me to sign up to. He said, if you're not over 54, Barry, you can you can sign up as a reservist. I thought, 54? I wish. So that was my background, and I've been doing nursing for a long time, but I've been doing information governance for about 25 years, both at I'll tell you, West Suffolk Hospital near Bury St Edmunds, and then over at Colchester Hospital in Essex. And then 4 years ago, as two hospitals were merging, I jumped ship and thought, well, you know, this is an opportunity, not quite ready for retirement just yet. Set up my own company, giving advice for data protection, information governance. I already had some contacts. I was already doing some training for some organizations. So with my early pension and with what I was doing, it was comfortable. So that's why I moved off. Very successful. Never needed to advertise or market. Yesterday and Wednesday was the first time we've done any marketing as such. And you can see my banner there that we took down to the care show. But I've been involved in the IG toolkit since it came out around about 2003, 2004. And then people might know it was the old IG toolkit. It was then revised in about 2007, 2008, then again in about 2012, 13, and then again in 2018. And I've been part of the consultation groups with, you know, the redoing of the toolkit. And one of the things I've got written down to make some notes later about, you know, about the toolkit, is it fit for purpose? And I'll come back to that a little bit later. But I've worked with it. I'm the DPO for GP practices, hospices, all of who have to do the DSPT. So I think I can't quote them all the assertions off one by heart, but they are certainly, they come to me quite quickly.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I have to admit at this stage that I'm probably the least experienced in this respect here today, because Dave, I know you've completed the toolkit on a number of occasions. I've only done it sort of once or twice at this point, so I'm a relative novice, but you've also got a bit of a background in this type of thing, Dave.
I think completed might be extending. I've certainly been involved. Being the person completing it might be extending my knowledge somewhat, but I've certainly been heavily involved with working on the toolkit and submitting information and working through the requirements for that.
Good stuff. So I thought, just to get us started, as I say, I think most of the people here today will be from sort of a healthcare background, but not exclusively. Mark, for one, is with us from housing. And I thought probably it'd be useful just to sort of set the scene of what we're talking about. So you mentioned there, Barry, that we talk about the DSPT, but also the IG toolkit. I mean, DSPT, obviously Data Security and Protection Toolkit. What is it specifically we're talking about, if you wouldn't mind giving us sort of a bit of an intro to the subject matter?
Yeah, so the best way to describe it, because I've been asked many, many times to describe what is the DSBT or the old IG toolkit. It's an assurance tool, basically, that you are handling and processing data safely and securely. If that's the sum up. There's lots to it, you know, and now we've got sort of 10 sections to it. Before that, I can't remember how many there were, but, you know, it's been reduced. So, you know, whether people say, oh, it's a big thing, it takes a lot to do, it's not as bad as it used to be. But it's an assurance tool. So if you're going to go out to a third party, or a third party comes to you and that you're going to be working together in health and social care, and you need to do the DSBT because you are CQC registered, then that DSBT should give you the assurance that they or you are handling data safely and securely. And it's easy to look up on the NHS website.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about an assurance tool primarily, sort of multi-purpose in a way, I guess, because it's both from the NHS's perspective, you know, sort of a way to keep individual organizations in check, but also then you've got, as you said, if you're working with specific suppliers, it's that assurance tool that maybe you would want to see. I suppose one of the reasons it came up is because obviously this is now changing again in its latest incarnation, version 4 are we on now? So I know the changes aren't substantial, but I think it's an opportunity to talk about it. But you know obviously far more about this than I do.
Yeah. So let me just, so I did this some time ago and I couldn't find the piece of paper, so I had to do it again last night when I got in. So the changes from last year's to this year, and if you've got your pen and paper ready, so it comes in different groups. So if you look at the spreadsheet, it talks about updates to guidance and to wording. And then it's just updates for guidance or updates or assertions that have been made mandatory. And there are a number of them. Let me just go through them. So the update to guidance and wording, 49 changes. Just guidance alone, 66. Mandatory, those that have been made mandatory that weren't before, they were optional, the 6. Where the wording has changed, I've got the number wrong here. I can't remember the number. I've got 9, but it's more than 9. But no change was 18. There's one new assertion. 11 were moved, taken out, removed, taken out. And there's a change to one question, one assertion, where the answer is either yes or no. And they've changed that the way that it's done. So there has been changes. Substantially, not a lot of change, really, from what was the previous year.
Okay, excellent. So I suppose the question is, really, you know, we discussed this off air when we were planning this. And one of the things we sort of came across is, you know, does this in theory make it easier? You talk about changes to guidance and to wording, so not necessarily talking about the level of the standard or the level of assurance that you're sort of asked to provide, but in terms of the actual process, is this something which has been, I can see your expression, and is that a difficult question expression?
No,
or is that a
no, Ollie, it's not. It's a perennial question from the year 2003 onwards.
So we're up to date then.
So what is the benefit of the DSBT, the IG toolkit as it was? As I said, I think it is. It's an assurance tool. And there are certain things, if you know the toolkit, you've got to answer those assertions. And some of them, it's just a tick box. Some it's a tick box and an optional box for putting comments in. And some of them, it asks you to upload evidence. So you've got all those things. Now, when people do it, how honest and truthful are they? I like to think, give everybody the benefit of the doubt, they're all very, very honest and very, very truthful and do it, you know, to the best they can. But I'm going to be really honest as well and say, for many organisations, it's a tick box. Yes, they do it. And I have some evidence of that. And I have to say, you know, of recent and reported it to the powers that be. But I think it's a good tool. Many, many years ago, I can't remember whether it was 2012, 2013 or something like that, the Department of Health asked their auditors, which was PwC, to do an audit on the toolkit. Is it fit for purpose? And I turned up with my thoughts. No, it's not. But does that mean to say we should get rid of it? The answer is not at all. Because my other comment was, it is a driver for change. So within an organization, if it says you need to have an up-to-date information security policy, and it's not up-to-date, that's your driver for change. To go to your IT and say, we need our information security policy. It needs to be up-to-date before we submit. So I think it's a great tool for change if it is used like that, because you can then say to your organization, we've got to do it, you know, and get them to say it's important. But otherwise, it can be a little bit of a tick box, and that worries me a little.
Yeah, well, you've unintentionally, or maybe completely intentionally, used what is one of Dave's trigger words, I'm afraid, which is tick box or tick box exercise. Dave, I'll let you explain why that is.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because you've got obviously straight comparisons with how some organisations are addressing the GDPR and trying to do the bare minimum, and is it a light switch moment? Have we done it? Ticked it? Yes, right, move on, forget it, and the whole lot becomes dusty and that kind of thing. But certainly with the, it's many years ago now since I was involved in looking at some information for the DSPT and the old IG toolkit. And I always had a bit of a concern sometimes for the very reason, in the sense that, yes, it's a tool that can be used properly, but there's certainly some information that I've seen uploaded to the DSPT when I was in submissions that you're kind of going, that's rather flaky as evidence. which is probably putting it politely. And then that just made me think, and it's one of the questions that we may kind of come on to or that you may have down for answering, but then it comes on to, well, who at the other end checks to verify whether the flaky evidence is substantially enough to pass that mark, and does it ever get passed back in that sense? Because that's kind of the crux that I always kind of had. Well, the organisation was, well, we need to show something and we can show this. And you're kind of going, but it's not really fit for purpose in the area that they're asking for, that kind of thing. But it still got submitted and everything still went through and nothing got picked up.
But I have a theory on that, David, of why that might be the case. Who's going to get audited? So you might submit the toolkit with a tick box and it's not really very robust, the evidence. Who's going to get audited? The big acute hospitals, big mental health. Very rarely do others. Now, you might say, well, that's a risk we're going to take. Well, I think that's a big risk because I always think that if you do that and you haven't got the evidence, and I always like it to the people that say to people, it's like this. If you have a data breach and the ICO was to investigate because it was a serious breach, one of the first things I think the ICO would do is to go to the DSPT, look at your submission, standards met. Oh, actually, you're saying we've got all our processes in place and yet something's gone wrong. That doesn't mean to say just because your standards met, you're not going to have a data breach or anything. You possibly will. But I think it would give the ICO some indication of saying, so I need to ask some questions then. You know, was this a technical thing that you said you've got in place but haven't? Or is this an organisational measure that you said you've got in place and haven't? You know, and I think it gives the ICO a bit of leverage, to be honest.
For sure. And it's very similar arguments I have with clients when they're working on a GDPR point, in the sense that you're kind of looking at the framework that you're trying to put in place. You get some organisations that are really on board, got a great culture towards it, and really trying to put the best efforts to have something respectful in place, whereas other clients might be less so. But I've often talked about trying to develop, in essence, because you may well be spending some money on what in essence could be considered as an intangible thing. If you certainly spent 30 grand on a new car, it'd be shiny and looking nice on the drive, that kind of thing. Whereas if you're spending a lot of money on compliance, what are you actually getting? I sometimes try to boil it down to you're investing in this safety net. So if things go wrong, what you're trying to do is hopefully the safety net will catch you. And I'm not saying the safety net hasn't got holes in it, but the whole premise is the fact that you're trying to demonstrate when something's gone wrong and it's an isolated incident and it's not systemic or something else wider within the organization. And that's what you're trying to invest in. And that's what you're trying to get to from a compliance point, because it certainly makes a defense a lot easier when you're trying to demonstrate it is just an isolated incident.
Yeah, no, good.
So that's my point. Anyway, we'll move on from that. I do get the point. It's I think it's one of those in that sense. Just again, probably jumping around a little bit, and I do apologise if I'm doing this, but you've highlighted the reasons why you should kind of take it seriously and upload stuff, and I fully agree with you in there. But what would be the outcome if you said no, we're not uploading information? in that sense? Would it just be a straight contractual issue? Would there be would it be more onerous than that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because over the years there have been organisations that say we're not uploading the evidence, and you know, so the old IG toolkit, it was dead easy. You just didn't upload it, and that was your organisation's decision. We're not putting our policies there, but you should always have them ready at hand. So should they be asked? So they set up folders. And I think of one big hospital not far from me. They set up folders, so where their data protection policy, information security policy, whatever policies they were in there, and then other documents they needed, they were all in folders. So if anybody came, they could put their finger on them almost immediately, but they didn't upload them, and that was acceptable. I think what we've got today is that how the toolkit works, it almost is forcing you to upload stuff. But there are ways around it. I'll probably get shot by NHS Digital for saying this. I don't think there is an absolute necessity for you to upload it, so long as it's available.
Mm-hmm. No, that would make sense in that sense. So if anybody needed to see the information, that is readily available to provide for evidence. So that would make absolute sense. So when I was doing the toolkit many moons ago, and I apologise, Ollie, because it might be taking over your questions, but when I was doing the toolkit many moons ago, it was something, and it may well be organisational culture, but they didn't kind of start it until ending towards the end of the year. Then there was mad panic, and it kind of pulled everything sideways for completing in order to make sure that you got through the submission accurately. What would you say is the best way to make sure that it's you're completing it? Would you kind of do it over the course of the year, get the information up and kind of slowly manage it as a program? Or would that kind of the approach of kind of leaving it to last minute and blind panic?
There are a number of things, because depending which organization you are, if you're the big organizations, acute hospitals, mental health, now ICBs and whatever, they have to put in a baseline submission at the end of February. So they have to do some work. They have to show that, in a sense, that they are actually working on it. I think we know from practice, don't we, that if you've got till the end of June, as it is now, to do the DSPT, it's not your priority. You've got a million other things you want to do. And I fully understand that. Therefore, you're going to leave it and you think, oh, we'll start in January. But January comes, or we're in the middle of winter pressures. We'll do it in February, March, April, March, financial end of year. We've got other things. And there's a million reasons you could put it off. And then people leave it to the last few weeks, and then they panic because the policy needs to be approved. It's got to go through a process. And therefore, that last few weeks become an awful pressure for people to complete and submit the DSPT. I fully understand that. But I would say to people, you know, have a look at it, because some of the things that you did last year are rolled over and you don't need to do them. But you need to check, make sure. But then there are new things, because what did I say? There was there's six that were non-mandatory before and now mandatory. You might want to put that on a bit of an action plan and say, OK, between now and Christmas, I'm going to look at those, because if any of them require a lot of additional work, then we might need to plan earlier. So I would look at those, you know, and then see if it's policies. If your policies are due to be out of date in April or May, you might want to start thinking about chasing people to make sure it's done. So I understand why for some people it's a last minute thing, because of the priorities that most organisations are doing it in health and care, local authorities, for adult and children's services. I can understand, but, you know, I think good planning. And the way I've said in my organisations is that we had a monthly information governance meeting. And what I ask people to do is to come to the next meeting to tell us where they were with their DSPT. Now, the chair of that was the director of finance, and they had to come with an update of where they were. So, in a sense, it was sort of pushing them in a nice way to make sure that they were doing the right thing.
Great advice there. I think it's I fully agree. It's we're all human at the end of the day. And I'm sure if somebody asked me to do something by June, it'd be something that's kind of work its way down the list rather quickly and then work its way back up the list the nearer June got. So I guess some of it's human instinct and all the normal pressures that come with working lives and competing interests and yeah, that kind of thing.
Although, David, sorry, even though it's the end of June, you can submit the toolkit way before the end of June. If you find that you've had your IG meetings in February, March, April, May, and you've completed it and you've done it all, then, you know, you've got all the evidence. You can then submit it at any time. So long as you submit it within that year, so 22-23, before the end of June, you're absolutely, you can do. You don't have to wait until the 30th of June and say, I've only got to do it. I've got to do it this morning. No, you can do it before.
For sure, for sure. And one final one then for me before I pass you back to Ollie, because I'm sure he's there may well be questions in the chat and things that he might want to possibly pick up on, is we looked at uploading information. It might be a tick box. There might be some information that we need to submit mandatorily or optional in that sense. And it's good practice to do so, because the ITO may look at it. You never know, you may randomly be picked for a bit of review at the other side in that place. But would you say the DPST is a self-regulatory tool? In the sense that it's, you're just saying you meet the standard, or do you think it's a bit more than that?
Well, it's a little bit more than that, because depending on your organisations, you have to be internally audited. And internal auditors will look at, and it's interesting, I think there are 13 assertions that they have to look at and give assurance. So it's a little bit of a random ones. They're told, you know, this list of 13, they'll go, they'll look and see whether the evidence that is supplied actually meets the requirement or the assertion. So although it is a self-assessment, there is some element of audit in it as well, but not for all organisations. And I have to say, for many years, maybe this is where I might get extra work if they ever took me up on this, and they haven't in the past 15 years, is I believe it ought to be peer reviewed. And nothing against auditors, because I think auditors, you know, they do a great job, whatever they're doing. But I think the DSPT is a bit of a unique beast on its own. And the people who understand the DSPT are the people who complete it. So I've always said, you know, if you have to do the DSPT, I'll come and audit yours. Not that you audit mine, because we might scratch each other's back, but you audit somebody else's. So, you know, it becomes a bit of a peer review. So we can have a look from eyes that understand the DSPT and understand what the evidence should look like. I think that would be a better way of doing it.
I think that's another sound bit of advice. I think that's a brilliant idea. So thank you for your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I absolutely support that as well. Just on that note, I mean, this is slightly a bit of a tangent, but is that something which is reflected more broadly throughout the sector? So you say that there's not that peer review in place, but in terms of sort of communication between leads more generally, is that something which is perhaps lacking?
And it's rather interesting, because in 2003, when the IG toolkit was coming out, I think there was about 5 acute hospitals, because it was just acute hospitals at the first. And we were all connected with each other in a loose way. But we all sort of said, so actually, let's say for 1.1 of the DSP, of the IG toolkit, what evidence are you going to give Ollie? What evidence are you going to give David? And you would give a list of the things that you know, this policy, this process. And we all had so many different things. So we actually formed the East of England IG Forum. That's where it came from. And what we do is we do share best practice. And I just looking the other day, and somebody asked about the DSPT and about evidence. You know, we can support each other as well. It's not an audit, but it's a way of supporting each other and saying, so I'm not quite sure here. The wording's changed. What does it mean for me? Does it mean my old evidence is good enough, or do I need some different evidence? I think that sort of thing is helpful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we always champion sort of that collaboration, I mean, regardless of the industry or the sector for that matter, because I think there is probably a trend amongst privacy professionals that, particularly if you're not in a unit or a team or a governance group, you do tend to get a bit isolated, particularly for more sort of smaller organisations, I suppose, if you're the sort of lone stalwart for data protection information governance. So yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Sarah's raising the point that, you know, we talk about peer review, but would that be just another resource issue at that point? Is that something which is the key spanner in the works in that respect?
I take the point, and I think she's absolutely right. But again, for me, I would want somebody with some eyes. So everybody knows my friend Andrew Harvey. You know, if he reviewed my toolkit, you know, I know that I would get a good. And it's almost a case of, I want that assurance that I've done it properly. And I'm not saying the auditors can't give that to a certain extent, but I just think it would be better if it was somebody else. It is another resource, but actually, sometimes that additional resource, me going to a day, you know, 20 miles up the road to look at their DSPT, or looking at it online, asking them to give me the evidence, I think that would take the pressure off me, you know, when it comes, have I completed the DSPT to the best of our ability?
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Just sort of talking about resourcing more generally, I suppose, and looking at ownership within organizations for sort of completing and, you know, actually sort of submitting your toolkit, because it's something that we spoke about, you know, off air, and there's a lot of chat on this on the session here, is sort of where that sits and whether it's something which, because we spoke about the delegation, right, Barry, previously when we were talking about this, and handing out effectively responsibilities, actions to different departments. But what I'm seeing here in the chat is that there's a divide potentially between the IT side of things, which I think is a struggle that we've acknowledged previously, which is, if you're IG, if you're the DPO, there are some technical elements to it, the toolkit, and that's not necessarily within your reach by default. And so how you maybe bridge that gap, whether it's a question of ownership, whether I suppose there are probably going to be sort of politics involved in it internally, potentially. But sort of where your stance is on this. And I know, Dave, because also sort of including you in this, because we have this purely from a DP perspective, if you're, you know, making sure that you've got the right sort of synergy with your IT team can be difficult at times, because it's not, we don't always necessarily speak the same language.
I think NHS Digital, NHS England, or whatever will stop ever talking to me once I'm in my next comment as well. Simply because having thought about it and how it changed in 2018 when it became the DSPT, when it became more technical. And I understand the reason behind that, because we had WannaCry, and, you know, we need it. We're in a different world now, and we need to make sure that our data is safe and secure technically. But I almost wonder whether we need two toolkits. Now people say, oh, we don't want two. But actually, one just goes to IT, and IT complete their part of giving the assurance that technically the information is safe, secure, you know, the patches are done, that the access controls are in place, all those sort of things. It's an IT thing. It's in the DSPT, but would it, I don't know, would it be better if they just did that part and it was a separate toolkit? And then the other parts of it about policy, about the organizational measures, the processes, the core decot in place, the CSIRO, how much information we share, all that part of it is part of the IG toolkit or the DSPT. That's one way of looking at it. But the other thing about, you know, divvying out the assertions to the relevant people, I think is important. When the toolkit first came out, and I don't know who's on the call and if there's anybody around when it first came out, IG, you did it all. It was your job. And you completed it all, and you went off and you got the policy from that department and from that department. You got, and you uploaded it. Now, because we can, you know, divvy it out, you say to IT, this is your responsibility. You say to HR, you've got some. Whether it was coding, you've got some. So you can divvy it out. But going back to the IG group, and I would say to each one of those I've divvied it out to, you come to the next group in November and tell us where you're at with updating your toolkit, your DSPT. So, yes, it is responsible, but don't put all the pressure on me, because some of those things are not mine. So that's how I would do it.
Sure. I've seen similar approaches, and kind of just picking up on Ollie's point, I've seen it in DP as well, when you're all sat around the table. Let's move away from the kind of the DPST for the minute and start looking at things like retention, because that always gets people wound up a little bit when you're looking at data retention. And they all seem to think it's an IT issue. And I've been in meetings where they say, well, it's an IT issue. It sits with IT. They're the one who controls the systems and things. And it's a conversation that kind of sat with me for many reasons. And one of them was the CTO on the at the meeting. Said that's fine if it's an IT issue, but if it's an IT issue, I'll delete the lot because I don't need the data. Then everybody went, well, you can't delete the data. You can't delete the data. And he went, well, it goes to show that it's not my issue. I can help you with how we can retain it and how we should be deleting it and so on and so forth. But the bits about the length of time, about retention, about when you should be deleting it in bits and pieces, it's your data. It's your processing activity. You've got to come up with that yourself. And it was just a really kind of comical meeting to be in when he said, well, if it's mine, I'll delete it because I don't need it. And I just saw it kind of quite comical, but it just showed the fact that you've got these relations around the organization. It is a collaborative approach, and parts have got to take the responsibility for their own parts, but it's not necessarily invested in one person to do the whole flipping lot, because it's near impossible.
Yeah, no. Okay, you think about, you've got HR, you've got finance, you've got health records, you know, different people, and IT take some responsibility for some stuff. Yeah, and I think you're right. And it's not just a one approach. Now, somebody might need to coordinate and say, oh, I need to ask IT if they've done the bits that part of their process they've done, or have HR deleted what they don't need anymore, or finance. But it is a collaborative approach, and everybody needs to be involved. Hence the IG toolkit, the DSPT is not a one person job.
No, for sure, for sure. So we've talked around quite a few things around the toolkit, and you may well have already covered some of the points that I'd like to raise in the next question. But I'm really interested to see what your thoughts are on some of the common issues that you've seen with submissions and that kind of thing.
I got my piece of paper. I know. So let's go. The biggest common issue that comes up almost in every IG committee, every East of England IG forum, every strategic information governance sign network, across the whole country, is the 95% training. Every time. And if I've complained about it for the past 10 years, so as loads of other people, and it still gets debated. And for a large hospital with 10,000, 15,000 staff, to meet the target of 95% is a huge task. Now, a small organisation with 100 people, do you know what? We can target individuals like that. It's easier. But I think it's one of those issues whereby there are some hospitals that are really good. And don't get me wrong, they may meet their 95% of people who've completed their mandatory training each year, but many don't, and it's interesting, they still meet standards met. So do they tick the box and say, yes, we've got 95%? But it might be a bit of creative accounting. So who do they count in that 95%? Well, that 5% you don't count are people who are on long-term sick, maternity, or whatever. That's absolutely fine. But what about people who don't handle data? What about in a big hospital or a big mental health where, you know, you've got groundsmen, you've got estates people, joiners, you've got catering staff. Now, OK, there might be some training that's needed to be done for portering and so on. But, you know, do we count all those in the 95%, or should they be excluded? I've heard arguments from both sides, and some people do both. They include them and some people don't include them. If it is making sure that data is safe and secure and giving that assurance, do we not just need to look at who really needs to have that mandatory? Who is handling personal and sensitive data and gear it to those? I just don't know. And then here's the other thing about this one, because it is the big hot topic every time, is that it's mandated 95%. Now, there is no other of the assertions that in a sense is mandated. Is it not an individual organization's own risk? So if an organization's only got 90% or 85% or 80% trained that year, is it not their risk? And should they not take, rather than be, you know, the word dictated isn't quite the right word I want to use, but being told that you've got to meet 95% or you don't meet that assertion, should the organisation not say, do you know what, we haven't quite met the higher figure that we would like to, but it's a risk because organisations own risks. Every day Why are we saying they're up to mid 95%? I understand about pushing to get the best that we can. Don't get me wrong. And I think, you know, if we can get 95, absolutely great. But it ought to be an organisational risk ownership.
No, for sure. And it's a really interesting point. So I've recently spoken to a client about their trading stats and what figures do they aim at. And their internal measures, not from a health organisation, but their internal measures are a little lower than that. And I said, do you think, just talking openly and that kind of thing, I said, do you think you'd ever get to achieve 100%? And she said, no, it'd be impossible because there's always staff leaving the organisation. There's always new staff coming in that are going through the induction training. So it's maybe not quite in that mandatory cycle training and that kind of stuff, as well as you mentioned, people on long-term sick. So in their kind of concept of training and what's going to be passable, they automatically see that high figures are unachievable because of the turnover of staff and everything else that you mentioned. So it's quite an interesting point that you raise. So other than the 95% training, is there any other common issues that you find that we've maybe not already covered? Is there are really good stories or some things to that might create a bit of debate in the chat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a good one. So as we've moved to from CCGs to ICBs, integrated care boards and integrated care systems, what we've got is different organisations, whether it be, say, in an area. So I think you're up in Leeds area, aren't you? So in the Leeds area, so your ICS up in the Leeds area, and you've got your local hospitals, you've got your local community, you've got your mental health, you've got your GPs, you've got your local authority, all part now of an ICS, integrated care system. You're going to have to be sharing data amongst all of you. Now, the question is, are you only as strong as your weakest link? So of all those organizations, you're going to be sharing data, and that data is then going to be used to deliver care and support to our clients. Are we only, with the old group, let's say there's 15 organizations, are you only as strong as your weakest link? And if that's true, then those who haven't done the DSPT properly, and maybe they all have where you are up in, because they're apart from being lead supporters, they're all good people. They've done the best they can. But if you've got some that haven't, there is a risk to that data. Now, I know because we've done an audit on an ICS and we've done a benchmark. And we said to them, you know, this is the evidence we're looking for. And they said, we've done that. We've done the DSPT and we've got standards met. We've also been audited. And so we're absolutely fine. We said that in that case, then you should be able to supply the evidence to us that you are safe and secure. But then when organisations can't give us the evidence, or the evidence they give us, as you said earlier, David, is very weak, there's an issue. And we've seen that. And therefore, as we're moving forward to collaborate, to share data, to deliver care, I think it worries me a little bit. So, you know, that was something that an ICS asked us to do, which is absolutely great. But I wonder whether others, you know, are just relying on the fact that people have done the DSPT.
Yeah, could well be kind of trying to take assurance. You mentioned before about the DSPT being an assurance tool, and whether they're kind of going, if you've got standards met, then we'll take that assurance in that sense. Another way, because I often look at that as it's kind of similar to when we do due diligence on new suppliers, and we're looking at new due diligence forms and that kind of thing. And yes, it's a risk-based approach, I get that, but how many people actually go beyond the have you got a policy, yes kind of approach? I always try to equate it to the police wouldn't be half as busy if they took the word no gov, I didn't do it, and went, that's fine, and then kind of moved on at that point. Yeah. So yes, there's a risk-based approach. Yes, there's a little bit of stress testing on depending on the nature and the size and the volume of the data and sensitivities and bits and pieces as to the level of due diligence. But it does come back to, I think the analogy is very similarly with if you rely on an assurance tool, do you just blindly rely on the assurance tool, or do you do some due diligence just to give yourself that comfort that actually, yes, they probably are compliant and not necessarily just taking the badge?
Yeah, so I've come across that, David, and where I've then gone out to these third parties and said, you know, and some of them had to do the DSPT, and I've said, and they said, oh, which standards met? And I said, well, I just need a little bit more evidence. I need a little bit. And they said, well, nobody else has ever asked us that. I said, yeah, but they're not Barry. and I think they get it, and I think they understand. And you know, I do a little bit of extra due diligence, whether that's been looking at their website, how many cookies they drop, looking at their privacy notice. I look at those things because it gives me a little bit of additional assurance, and I document it and to make sure that, you know, if anybody ever came back to me, you know, we could show what we've done.
No, for sure, because I've been in similar positions where I've asked to see policies. Have you got policies? And they give you the assurance that they have. And you say, well, do you mind if I just have a look at your data protection policy or your ISMP or something like that? And they happily send it across to you, but it still refers to the 1998 Act and that kind of thing. Last review data 2016. And you go, well, you might have a policy, but it does appear to be rather out of date.
Yeah. So just to frighten you, David, when we're doing this audit with this ICS, we did that, and we asked for their information security policy 4 years out of date.
Wow.
I know, and that's the sort of thing. So they tick the box and say they've got one. Yes, they have. Not fit for purpose.
No, for sure, for sure. So there's quite a lot of commonalities there, isn't there, like we say, between the due diligence and the kind of levels of evidence that we're looking for, either just to satisfy ourselves or otherwise.
I would say to people, have pride in your DSPT. Do it well. I really am a supporter of the DSPT, regardless of some of the things I've said. I think it's a great tool to drive change and to make sure that we hope that, you know, if you are responsible in a sense of doing of submitting it, you know, use it as a tool to get things changed and get people to do it and robustly. I think if you do that, you can walk away thinking, do you know what? They can come and audit us. Because we have done it, we've done it well.
For sure, for sure. Have you seen any kind of bad examples of it kind of being completed and things that kind of make you kind of go, ooh, in that kind of sense?
Yeah.
Obviously not naming anybody, but just...
No. But yes, I have. But sometimes you think yourself, why have you shot yourself in the foot? Because this part of it is really, really good. You've done really well at this. But this part... You know, maybe policy, you know, you're not really very good at policies in your organization, and they need to change. But I have to say that, you know, even though people might leave it to the last minute and do it, you know, just before submission date, there are some good things in DSPTs when I've audited them. And there are some things that I think you would. But the question is, does it do enough to get them over the line? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've had to say, do you know what? Yeah, it could be better. But yes, you've got a policy, but they're not having one at all. So I've seen good and bad, David, but sometimes, more often than not, it's good with a little bit of bad in it.
And have you seen, not necessarily the toolkit submissions, it's not necessarily a fault of the toolkit either in that sense, but do you think organisational culture has got a large part to play in it? And do you see that within the organisations that you look at around the DSPT? Because sometimes from just kind of flipping it back to kind of the GDPR and looking at how some individuals or some, not individuals, so to say, but some organisations have got on board with the GDPR posts, that kind of the old 1998 Act, and some are, as we looked at, kind of tick box exercises and quite a poor culture towards generally change or a poor culture towards kind of compliance. And do you see that as a bigger factor than necessarily the DPST, or do you find the culture generally within the healthcare settings a lot better?
I don't know, to be honest. I think, and literally you were posing the question, I was thinking, if it comes to clinical governance, you know, because you want things to be right when patients are operated on and so on. So clinical governance, you know, a lot of store is put into that. Financial governance, there's a lot of put into that as well. I do think sometimes that information governance is a bit of a Cinderella, you know, because people don't understand it as much. You know, or that's Barry's job, that's David's job, that's Ollie's job, you know, and you have to get on and do it. I think, and I'm going to go back to, you know, that IG committee of having that support there. So when people come, so your director who might chair it is to hold people to account and, you know, and say to them, look, you've got to do this. It's important to do it. just like clinical governances, just like information finance governances, information governance, because after all, it's about the rights and freedoms of individuals. It's their data. We need to make sure it's safe and secure and we're not misusing it or it's not being accessed inappropriately. So I think, you know, there is good reason why it isn't, but I wished it was a bit better.
No, for sure, for sure. And I, again, a lot of what you you mentioned there really echoes a lot of the experiences that I've seen within organisations towards both many moons ago when I was kind of looking at the DSPT and also more lastly with the GDPR and that kind of the drive towards GDPR compliance. And it won't be the first time that I've kind of drawn an analogy to the fact that maybe a few years ago now, people, when you talk about health and safety compliance, well, that was Bob's job. But now everybody's on board with health and safety. And I'm not quite sure whether information governance, information and that kind of thing is kind of going through the same process, where it's going to be a bit of a slow burn, but we'll get there with it. It's no longer Barry's job, it's everybody's job, but it's just Barry heads it up in that kind of sense.
I think there is a push, and I think this comes from NHS England, is getting people to be more accountable, you know, whether it be the nurse, the doctors, the OTs, the physios, but, you know, giving them the tools to be able to do their job, giving them the training, giving them the information, the guidance, so that they can actually make those decisions. And then they only need to come back to me when there is an issue. But, you know, I think if we can empower people, I think that would be a greater way. Change the culture by doing that.
For sure, for sure. And just kind of moving around a little bit, if you have, well, if you're in the if you're obligated to complete the Data Protection Security Toolkit, do you see organisations necessarily certifying to CE Plus or 27001 as well, or is it just generally the toolkit that they align to, and the kind of the 27001, shall we say, is more of a commercial thing for commercial people who need it, and not necessarily a driver within organisations that's got the DSPT framework?
Well, there is you know, some driver for people to do 27001 or Cyber Essentials, Cyber Essentials Plus, because if you do that, it actually ticks a lot of the technical stuff within the DSPT. And I foolishly said last year, and I think it was just the wrong words I used, and I said, oh, because you've got Cyber Essentials Plus, it was a private health organization and working with them, because we've got Cyber Essentials Plus, you know, it's easy now to complete the DSPT. And he said, yeah, but Barry, it wasn't easy to get Cyber Essentials Plus. And I thought, whoa, Barry, step back a little bit. He's absolutely right. So it is a lot of work to get, you know, those standards. But if you have got them and you're working towards them and you've got them, you know, it does help with the DSPT. And I think those themselves are a great indicator that you are looking at protecting that data. And the toolkit has changed. So the fact that you say that you've got it ticks a lot of boxes, so you don't have to do them. And that's good. So, you know, there's not a lot of repetition. You don't have to go into each one and say, yes, we've got this. Oh, yes, we've got this. Oh, you've got it again. So I think it's good. And I think it says something that, you know, maybe looking at more standards like that that tick a lot of boxes.
No, for sure, for sure. And we're just running out of time. I don't know if Ollie's going to come back in, but just a final one for me, unless Ollie's got anything else to add. Then you mentioned about the changes for this year, and you looked at some of the stats. What's coming next year? Do you think that'll change again? Have you got any ideas of what's where they're looking?
Yes, it's going to change, and it's going to change. I think it's going to be. I don't know, because I'm not on the internal team, but from some of the DPO webinars that we go on, from our friend John, who's a great advocate for the toolkit, and we'll keep people informed, John Hodgson from NHS Digital, it's going to change next year. Now, how that's going to change? But he said it's going to change substantially, and I don't know what that means substantially, but I think we can see, as it changed from the IG toolkit to the DSPT, I'm thinking it might change similar to that change again next year.
Wow, okay, so quite a big
I get that impression. Yeah, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
But change is always good. It's exciting change, isn't it? Because it gives you something else to think about. It always creates new opportunities and new ways of looking at things. So it's not always negative being a change.
Yeah, it's business as usual, David. Whatever the change that is, we've got to get on with it and cope with it.
And do they normally provide, just to kind of enhance my knowledge, if it is a substantial change coming, do they normally provide kind of leading times for compliance? Is it very much it's changed, you've got the year before the next submission, so you've in essence got a year?
You still have to complete, so it's the end of June next year for this year's DSPT, then it'll be another 12 months. There'll be lots of guidance. There will be some things that are the same, you know, it may be reworded, but there will be some, I believe, by what I hear, there will be some different things. But it will be, I think they want to make it more appropriate and applicable so that, you know, it does meet the need. And I think the toolkit does meet the need, or the DSPT. Can I just say, I know we're getting towards the end, you know, I would say to people, don't beat yourself up, but just have a plan. You know, work through it. Don't wait till the very end, because you find then you've got something that you should have done. It's going to take you weeks to do. And if you're planning to do pen testing, you're planning to do your cyber essentials, then, you know, plan it in plenty of time. Don't leave it till June.
Some great advice there, again. And I think, when will we find out about the changes, the pending changes for the next year? Because it certainly sounds like we may have to have another chat, and maybe have to have another series to kind of consider what they may look like.
I don't know. Crystal ball for me.
No worries. Well, we'll once we find out, I'm sure we'll chat, and we'll be able to get you back on. We'll go through what some of those changes.
Yeah, that's good.
So I'll hand back to Ollie. I don't know if you've got anything else to add there, Ollie.
No, you're clearly vying for my job there, Dave. I barely got a word in then. unfortunately, I think I'm having some slight Wi-Fi issues. So thanks for taking up the baton, as I missed a couple bits there. But nothing really to add from my perspective, or at least nothing substantial to what you discussed. I think that's as far as we can take it today without potentially, you know, spending another couple of hours getting into real specifics. And obviously we're sort of running out of our allocated time here. There's been plenty of comments in the chat. There's been a lot of conversation going on now, a lot around the Cyber Essentials Plus point as well, Barry, which is an interesting one. And more broadly, certifications, I suppose, and how far that can take you. But as we sort of wrap up, I don't think there's anything specifically from me. I will leave you both with the opportunity to give us some final thoughts, if there are any, in addition to what we've just said. But before we do, I would just like to thank you again, Barry, for your time this afternoon. I've thoroughly enjoyed that. Any closing thoughts?
Can I go with, I just had a quick look at, and I'll have a look at the questions a bit later as well, but I've just seen Michael Pennington, and he says he loves the toolkit. Michael, I do, regardless of maybe some of the things I've said, I do love the toolkit. And I think it's good. And I think, you know, it does serve a purpose. So I would say to people, you may not love it, but try and enjoy it and do the best you can with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'd echo something you said earlier, Barry, which is, if when you are doing it, really make the most out of it, take pride in it, really sort of invest in it as an opportunity, I suppose. And as you said, a drive for change, I think, is one of the turns of phrase I really, really enjoyed. Dave, any thoughts before we close out today?
Yeah, probably just echoing what you said, really. I think if you do take it seriously and you do give it your best efforts, then internally you're moving more into better practice, and you're doing what you should be doing for the benefits of your patients, or for those that you're looking after and those that you're caring for. Because at the end of the day, as we always say with data protection, we need to be mindful of the fact that we are actually dealing with people, and if we get it wrong, it's going to have an impact on those individuals, and therefore I think if we go out with the intention to do it right, then it can only be beneficial to those individuals that we're caring for.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, as Mark says in the chat, thanks again, Barry, for joining us this afternoon. Thank you, Dave, for your time and insights. Thanks to everyone who joined us live this afternoon. If you're listening to this back and you've not yet had the opportunity to come and join us live, I really, really strongly suggest you do, because this is the best forum. You get to interact with the chat. There's plenty of things I didn't pick out of there today, but some really great conversations. Thanks everyone for joining us. We really enjoyed that. We will be back again next week with an episode of GDPR Radio. So that's our sort of open surgery type forum. So if there's anything that we've not mentioned today that you'd like to bring up, do come and speak to us then. Barry, if people want to reach out to you, obviously get in touch with us. We can put you in touch. But if not directly, how can people find out more about you and what you do?
As you can see, bjmigprivacy.co.uk. That's my email.
Lovely stuff. And we'll include some links in the description of this when it goes out and in all the messaging. But yeah, if anyone wants to get in touch with Barry, then I strongly suggest you do so. Without further ado, we'll bring this to a close. We hope you all have a lovely weekend, and we hope to see you all very soon.
Thank you. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Bye. All the best, Barry.
Bye. Thank you.